Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 18, Description of Varnashrama Dharma, verse number 39. Tavat paricharit bhakta, shradhavan anasuyaka, yavat brahma vijaniyan. Mam eva gurum adritaham, tavat paricharit bhakta, shradhavan anusuyaka, yavat brahma vijaniyan. Mam eva gurum adritaham, tavat paricharit bhakta, Shradhavan anasuyaka, yavat brahma vijaniyan, mam eva gurum adrita. Tavat, that long, paricharit, should serve, bhakta, the devotee, shradhavan, with great faith, anasuyaka, being without envy, yavat, until, brahma, spiritual knowledge, Vijaniyat, he clearly realizes. Mam, me. Eva, indeed. Gurum, the spiritual master. Adritaha, with great respect. Translation. Until a devotee has clearly realized spiritual knowledge, he should continue with great faith and respect and without envy to render personal service to the Guru, who is none different from me. Purport. As stated by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in his Gurvashtaka prayers, Yasya Prasada Bhagavat Prasada. One receives the mercy of the Supreme Lord through the mercy of the bona fide spiritual master. A devotee who has been blessed by his guru with spiritual knowledge becomes qualified to directly engage in the mission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada always emphasized that service to the spiritual master in separation, pushing on the mission of the guru, is the highest form of devotional service. The word paricharet in this verse indicates waiting upon one's master by rendering a personal service. In other words, one who has not clearly realized the teachings of his spiritual master should remain very close to the guru to avoid falling down into illusion. But one who has acquired realized knowledge by the mercy of his spiritual master may expand the spiritual master's mission by traveling around the world to preach Krishna consciousness. Tavat paricharit bhakta shraddhavan anasuyaka yavat brahma vichaniyan mamevam gurum andridham. Until a devotee has clearly realized spiritual knowledge, he should continue with great faith and respect and without envy to render personal service to the guru, who is not different from me. I was also requested to read the verses 40 and 41 because they were originally scheduled for this date. So I'll just read the translation. One who has not controlled the six forms of illusion, lust, anger, greed, excitement, false pride, and intoxication, whose intelligence, the leader of the senses, is extremely attached to material things, who is bereft of knowledge and detachment, who adopts the sannyasa order of life to make a living, who denies the worshipable demigods, his own self and the supreme personality of Godhead within himself, thus ruining all religious principles, and who is still infected by material contamination, is deviated and lost both in this life and the next. Purport. Lord Krishna here condemns bogus personalities who adopt a sannyasa order of life for sense gratification while still maintaining all of the symptoms of gross illusion. A false show of sannyasa is never accepted by intelligent followers of Vedic principles. So-called sannyasis who ruin all Vedic religious principles sometimes become famous among foolish persons, but they are simply cheating themselves and other followers, and their followers. These charlatan sannyasis are never actually engaged in the loving devotional service of Lord Krishna. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Dharine. So, Srila Prabhupada here refers to professional beggars in the dress of sannyasis. It's a very popular business, especially in India, where people still respect people in their renounced order of life, though they just, you know, have this sannyasi saffron dress, and people, you know, feel some respect and they give some donations. And actually it's a strange idea to use renunciation to maintain attachments. You know, it's because these ideas are totally in conflict with each other. Those people who are detached inside, you know, they're living this a life of sannyasi in a natural way without, you know, collecting too much funds. But those people who have the strange ideas, you know, to maintain themselves by posing as a renounced people, it's a kind of, you know, hypocrisy, and that's why it's condemned by Lord Krishna here, and, you know, it's condemned by the society. because, you know, this external renunciation should follow the internal mood of detachment, which is called tyaga. Because sannyasa is an external renunciation, and tyaga is internal detachment. So when sannyasa is taken based on this internal tyaga, then everything is fine, things are in tune. But if person has many material detachments, attachments inside, he is not tyagi inside, and he takes sannyasa in a premature state of life, then sooner or later it will create some troubles for the person and for the society around the person who had some faith in him. So sooner or later it will cause a fall down, and that's why taking sannyas in a premature stage is never recommended. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada gave sannyas to his young followers to push forward the mission, because he didn't have much time and he needed people who are fired up. And but in the long run, all these troubles, they are forgotten, and only good things that were done, they are remembered. So he had to run the risk of doing that. But in the situation which is not that urgent, that pressing as it was in Srila Prabhupada's time, there's no need to take this sannyas prematurely. So what is the main disqualification of the person who takes renounced order of life prematurely? Krishna here says that his main disqualification is that his intelligence, the leader of the senses, is extremely attached to material things, and he is bereft of knowledge and detachment. This is so-called Dehatma Buddhi. Buddhi is intelligence, and Dehatma means materialistic view. So it's a kind of materialistic intelligence based on the bodily identification. So if person maintains this kind of material intelligence, it means that he is not ready for detached life. So instead of controlling the senses, the intelligence, this kind of intelligence, is controlled by the senses. We know this famous illustration, the picture where the body is depicted as a cart or chariot, and the senses are horses, and the intelligence is a driver. So, in a natural way, the driver should, drive the horses. But if the driver is weak, then horses can pull so hard, and, the intelligence of the driver loses all control, and then, this chariot goes somewhere. It ends up in a ditch somewhere. It goes off the road. So, intelligence should be strong enough to control the senses, and to do that, intelligence should be connected with the Supreme Source, with Krishna. In this way, if you got spiritual intelligence, that this intelligence has enough power to control the senses. Otherwise, senses can push, can pull so hard, and intelligence loses all control. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, Karma Yoga, in the verses from 40 up to the end, Krishna said that materialistic mind, senses, and intelligence are full of lust. He said that lust resides in the senses, lust resides in the mind, and lust resides in the intelligence, in three places. So if lust is still there, there is no question of renounced order of life. So how this lust in three places is manifest? Lust in the senses is manifested as an immediate urge or immediate desire to get in touch with the object of the senses. Lust in the mind is manifested as a constant meditation upon the objects of desire. And lust in the intelligence is a kind of justification of materialistic way of life, and the person has to compromise with material nature, and he kind of justifies himself, and he makes a philosophy, he's saying that, yes, my materialistic way of life is right. That's a manifestation of a lust in the intelligence. And it is the most subtle manifestation of intelligence. Gross lust is just, we can see that people can't wait, to get in touch with the sense object. They want something, very passionately right now. That's lust in the senses. But lust in the mind and lust in the intelligence is more subtle, and you can't detect it so easily. And a sincere person should see this kind of lust inside this intelligence and mind and do something about it. And actually, the spiritual process is meant, to do away with this lust inside our intelligence and our mind. So how do we do that? Srila Prabhupada gave us the process of purification of the senses. Mm? So we purify the senses by externally engaging them in the worship of the Lord, devotion service, taking prasadam, taking darshan of the deity, and doing some practical service. In this way, our external senses are engaged, and little by little they get purified. Mm? What do we do with the lust in our mind? To you know, distinguish this fire of lust in our mind, we chant, because you know, mantra means deliverance of the mind from all this, you know, from all this lust, from all these materialistic ideas and desires. And how do we purify our intelligence from lust? That's by philosophy. We study shastras, we hear lectures. Actually, just studying shastras is not enough. Because shastras have many subtle points and sometimes they are misunderstood. And in order to clarify all the subtleties, we need, you know, the contact with some sadhu, spiritual master, or some advanced preacher, the one who really knows all the details. And that's why Srila Prabhupada introduced every day the hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, so that devotees can, you know, hear, ask questions, discuss, and in this way, clarify many subtleties, you know, that are in the shastras, and sometimes they are misunderstood if you just read on our own. Of course, devotees are on the level, on different levels of maturity, and some people are, they have some, you know, bright intelligence, and they can understand everything themselves, so Krishna from the heart can, you know, help them. But majority of people are not on that level, and they require some sangha, some association, you know, to clarify all these, you know, subtle things. You know. So we can say that studying the philosophy and hearing from other devotees is a good way to clarify our intelligence from lust. And here also, it is stated that detachment from sense gratification is of two kinds. It's based on higher knowledge and based on higher taste. Generally, yogis and jnanis, they try to develop spiritual knowledge without devotional service. They may also, you know, be quite detached people, but their detachment is based just on spiritual knowledge. But devotees, they also need spiritual knowledge, but they go further. They try to develop spiritual taste by devotional service. So it's much more, we can say, much more stronger way to have knowledge and higher taste. Mm-hmm. So how do we get this spiritual knowledge? Generally, we get it from hearing. In traditional society where there were no books, you know, you could get knowledge only by hearing from guru, from some advanced preacher. And, you know, to make him speak, you somehow had to satisfy him first by devotional service. So first, moral principle, you know, the submission, service, and then if guru is inclined to speak, he can give you knowledge. That's the process. Of course, now we are not living in a traditional society anymore, and books are available. Everybody, anybody can, you know, get a book and read, and it's good. Mm? But to really understand things as they are, still we need to clarify many points with somebody who is much more advanced. And to get that, we have to do some service. Mm? Otherwise, if you just get knowledge by reading, that is good, no doubt. But this knowledge can remain just theoretical, just jnana. Mm? So in order to turn jnana into vijnana, practical wisdom, we need to apply service. So service is that ingredient which turns jnana into vijnana. Mm? So without service, jnana just remains a theoretical, external thing. And person can be, you know, quite erudite, you know, he can be quite, you know, scholarly, knowledgeable, but if there is no idea of service, then, you know, his jnana may not save him, because it remains theoretical. That's why in Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna recommends us to approach guru, he says, pariprashnina sevaya. Pariprashnina means you inquire, you ask questions, but also sevaya. Seva means do service. Because otherwise, if you don't do this service, and then just jnana remains jnana. But, you know, to turn it into practical wisdom, into vijnana, we need to do some service, and this is the secret, actually. So, by getting books, by acquiring knowledge, we get theoretical knowledge. But to get real knowledge, to digest it, you know, we have to do some practical service and serve Guru. And that's why in the verse 39, Krishna said that unless a disciple gets a realized knowledge, he should remain close to the Guru and do some personal service. And only after that, only after he got the mercy of the spiritual master, who is satisfied with the service, and in this way the disciple gets realization, only that, only after that he can, you know, go on with pushing the mission of spiritual master, because now he becomes, at least Madhyama Adhikari, one who digested spiritual knowledge, for whom this knowledge is already vijnana, practical wisdom, you can say. This is a very important point, actually. Another thing here is that, on the same topic, is that spiritual knowledge, this is Sambandha Jnana, is very important, and because in the long run we want to get Krishna Prema. This is a process. We know that Sambandha Jnana, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Krishna Prema is our Prayojana. To get that prayojana, we have to practice. That's abhideya, and to practice properly, we need some bandha knowledge. If we still, you know, on the way, if we didn't get Krishna prema yet, it means that something wrong is with our abhideya. And if we have some problem with our abhideya, our practice, it means the problem is deeper in the sambandha. So everything, you know, gets down to sambandha jnana, which is generally got through the process of hearing Shravana. So by Shravana, by hearing, we get a solid Sambandha. And then if we understand everything properly, then we can practice Abhideya without any mistakes, without committing offenses. You know, as we know, the spiritual name is all-powerful. But what does spiritual master do at the time of initiation? He explains the rules, you know, how to avoid 10 offenses, you know, so that spiritual the holy name may manifest himself fully. Otherwise, if you commit offenses, spiritual name, holy name remains all-powerful, but it doesn't manifest its power because we commit some offenses. And that's why by knowledge, by Sambandha Jnana, we can improve our performance of our abhideya. Sometimes, you know, we hear that we have to improve our chanting. We can't improve our chanting unless we improve our hearing, because chanting is based on hearing. First chanting, first hearing, then chanting. So hearing is a key, we can say, because it's a basis, it's a foundation of everything we do. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, etc. So all process of devotional service, they are all based on hearing, because it gives us proper sambandha. And if we got some problems with abhideya, and, you know, and if, you know, prayojana seems so far away, it means the problems are still in sambandha. That's the basis. So, by hearing properly, we can start to chant properly. By chanting properly, we can purify ourselves quicker, much quicker than if we do it with some mistakes. And then, you know, prayojana becomes much closer, much more realistic. That's the way. So, what else should we say? And also in the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami states in the very beginning that studying of Shastras is increasing our devotion. That means that, you know, studying of Shastra is Sambandha, and devotion is our Abhideya, it's our practice. So to practice devotional service much better, we need this solid knowledge. That's why Srila Prabhupada used to, you know, insist many, many times that his disciples should not just distribute the books, but also read the books very steadily every day, and not just read the book, but discuss. And he said you should discuss Krishna conscious philosophy from different angles, from different points of view, so that we can see that how this knowledge is applicable to any sphere, any area of life. so that we can understand that Krishna consciousness is not just a religion, it's more than a religion. Srila Prabhupada used to say that Krishna consciousness is a science, and science is universal. Religious, maybe some local, you know, that religion, this religion, you know, in different parts of the world, there are different religions, they are local. But knowledge is universal. Knowledge applies to anyone. So we can distribute Krishna consciousness as a religion, it's one thing, or we can distribute Krishna consciousness as a science, which is much broader. And, you know, not so many people are interested in religion, actually, because religion has a bad name in Kali Yuga. So many different problems happen within religions. But when we take Krishna consciousness as a universal spiritual knowledge which applies to any area of life and which applies in, which is, we can say, relevant to any person without, I mean, regardless of his or her faith, then it's a different thing that people can immediately see, you know, how this knowledge is relevant to my life. So the preacher, he should understand Krishna consciousness on that level as a science, not just as a religion, because it's just a superficial approach to the Krishna consciousness. And if you are able to do that, then our preaching can, you know, give us much more opportunities. We can reach out to so many people who are interested to somehow understand life, you know, deeper, and somehow correct their mistakes and improve their living. Even on the material level, it can be a good start, because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said that four categories of pious people approach him. Those who are distressed, those who are looking for wealth, those who are inquisitive, and those who are looking for the absolute truth. So anyone can start. Like Dhruva Maharaj, you know, his initial motive was just to get wealth and to get the position. So you can say he was kind of materialistic bhakta. But in the process of his service, in the process of his chanting, when ultimately he got a darshan of the Lord, his motivation changed. He became purified. So because, you know, he could compare what he wanted and what he got. You know, he said that I wanted broken glass, but I got a diamond. So broken glass doesn't cost anything. It's everywhere, but diamond is very costly. Although they sometimes may look similar. When Dhruva Maharaj got the darshan of the Lord, he immediately, you know, changed his value system, and he started to, you know, somehow trying to explain himself that, well, I was such a fool that, you know, I wanted this broken glass, but now I got a real thing. So in a similar way, we can start from any point, from any motivation, from any reason. But then, if we are sincere, in due course of time, Krishna interferes, and somehow, you know, we start to change and things get better, and our motivation becomes more and more purified, and in this way, we feel much more enthusiastic, because our spiritual energy comes in. And when we get in touch with the spiritual energy through devotional service, then, you know, devotee starts to experience this bliss, because spiritual nature, it is blissful by nature. It's ananda. Ananda is part of spiritual energy. When we are still in material energy, we can experience three kinds of happiness and three modes of material nature. You know, happiness and goodness at best. But if you got at least some glimpse, you know, some glimpse of spiritual happiness, then, you know, it makes a big difference, and the person can compare and see and make the conclusions what is better. So this is a process of purification, and in the verse number 39, Krishna is saying that we have to serve our spiritual master to get a realized knowledge. And then the next verses, we can see that if the knowledge is realized, then person can take sannyas and preach the mission. Otherwise, if his knowledge is not realized, he is still attached to the material life, better not to take renounced order of life, and, you know, take a safer position in the ashram which corresponds to the internal level of that person, be it grihastha ashram or vanaprastha ashram, and little by little just do the dharma of that particular ashram, and you know also be engaged in devotional service. And when the heart is fully purified, then you know he can make a next step and take a renounced way of life. Although in Kali Yuga, it's not generally recommended, and only you know rare people of some brahminical type they can do it. You know, just for the sake of preaching. So, well, I told what I wanted to say. So if there are any questions or points of discussions, you're welcome, yes.
Thank you, Guru. You were mentioning two ways of controlling this lust in the intelligence. You said by higher knowledge and by higher taste.
Mm-hmm.
Could you explain a little bit more, what is that higher taste and how you experience it?
The question was in, that I mentioned that there are two ways to control or purify the intelligence from the lust. One is by higher knowledge, and another is by higher taste. Higher taste, as we know, is the contact with the spiritual nature. If you look at our spiritual plan, we can say our plan is to go from Shraddha to Prema. And the crucial point is Anartha Nivritti. Anartha Nivritti, it means that we have to somehow purify ourselves from our material attachments. That's anarthas. And if you're able to do that, at least, you know, if we, you know, purify ourselves, you know, maybe 60-70% from this anarthas, then we can become nishtha, steady, and that gives us access to ruchi, taste. Mm-hmm. And we are doing that through devotional service. Mm-hmm. That's the way. And as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse 59, as far as I remember, param drishto nivartate. Param drishto nivartate means when you see the higher. Param means higher, drishto means you can see. Param drishto nivartate. Nivartate means that you can, you know, reject lower things. So on the spiritual level, seeing or experiencing is the same thing, you know, in our material life, seeing the cake and eating the cake are two different things. But on the spiritual level, seeing the cake and eating the cake is the same thing, because, you know, senses are interchangeable in the spiritual reality. So that's why Krishna says, param drishto, just by seeing the Supreme Truth, by getting in touch with the Supreme Truth, is, you can nivartate, you can reject material things. So, the taste changes, we can say, even, you know, during our, I mean, in the process of our material life. Take a child, for example, you know, the child is busy, you know, playing with toys, but when he or she gets older, they forget about, you know, all these toys, all these, you know, dolls, and they, you know, get real cars, real babies instead of, you know, doll baby. So in a similar way, you know, the consciousness progresses throughout the life. But if we get, you know, this devotional process and devotional service, that gives us access to a higher reality, to the spiritual reality. And this reality, as I mentioned, it is ananda by nature. It's blissful. And the soul has a tendency to seek for bliss. And when we get this, at least some glimpse of the spiritual taste, so it immediately, you know, makes us more or less indifferent towards material reality. And we can see it on the practical examples, like take, for example, food, you know. You know, most of us, you know, mostly before we took to Krishna consciousness, we were eating, you know, anything, you know, meat, fish, you know, eggs, like that. But after taking Krishna prasadam, after starting our process of purification, somehow or other, you know, this lower taste to this tamasic food, you know, it just vanished, it just disappeared. And now, you know, we don't even think about it. Oh, you know, I didn't eat meat for 30 years, I want to try something. We don't get this idea. So it means that our taste has changed already. But, you know, a few things, they are a little more subtle. Because the taste, it belongs, it is connected with the element of water, which is pretty gross. And a few things that are much more subtle, like, you know, music or some information which comes through the hearing, or we want to touch something, we can say that this kind of sense gratification is much more subtle because it has something to do with much more subtle elements like ether and air that are connected with hearing and touch. And that's why to get rid of the contamination on this level is a bit more difficult than to get rid of the attachment on the gross level. Because this gross level of gratification is connected with the elements of earth. Earth is connected to smell. So if you, pass by some place where people are frying meat, it becomes disgusting. Because it's an element of earth is connected with, this smell. And, as I mentioned, we can't taste this material food anymore because it's connected with the element of water, which is also gross. But more subtle things which are connected to the air, space, or fire, it's a little bit more difficult to get rid of tastes, of the tastes, material tastes, which are connected with these elements. But the process has started, and at least we got higher taste on the level of smell and taste. That's our little victory already. So we just have to go on, and as we become more purified, the sense gratification, which is connected with more subtle elements, also becomes kind of tasteless, but it requires more time.
Very nice class. I wanted to clarify my understanding also. Recently reading Srila Prabhupada's few comments in his letter to Madhusudan Prabhu, that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so renounced that even most renounced Gaur Krishnadas Babaji used to come and hear him when he was Grihastha. So then a question comes, what Prabhupada meant, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so renounced, but he's in a form of Grihastha. But most renounced in Navadvip was Gaur Krishnadas Babaji by all the Vaishnavas accepted. But he used to go and hear him. So then I put from another lecture of Prabhupada that actually renunciation belongs to the internal potency. Renunciation is not, it's freedom from self-centeredness, not freedom from work.
Yes.
So when I put all these puzzles, so many, then I see that actually renunciation is a compulsory for every devotee, every living entity in this conditioned soul. But it is not the dress or external feature so much. It is the internal. So can you emphasize how it applies in a grihastha every day to day?
Right. Thank you for your nice comment. The last chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which is called The Perfection of Renunciation, starts from the definition of renunciation. And in the first 11 verses of the 18th chapter, Krishna is given different definitions of renunciation as different sages, they have different views like that. And then finally he makes a conclusion that real renunciation is just go on with the external dharma, external work, but being internally detached, that's called tyaga. And Krishna is using that same word, tyaga, internal renunciation, internal detachment, in the one of the most important and, most often quoted verses from Bhagavad Gita, sarvadharman parityaja. Parityaja, it's parityaga. Parityaga means complete detachment. Tyaga is detachment, parityaga means complete detachment. And this complete detachment can happen only if the person is completely attached to Krishna. Completely attached to Krishna, that means completely detached from matter. And as for this principle of renunciation, internal renunciation in the life of Grihastha, well, Grihastha is the person who has to deal with material energy much more than representatives of other three ashrams, because he has to maintain family, he has to get a job, he has to maintain his house and so many things. And so for him this contact with material nature is unavoidable, we can say. But by Performing sacrifices, as you read, you know, in the very beginning, before the class, you know, the general contents of the chapter, you mentioned that it was mentioned there that Grihastha has to perform yagyas. Hmm? And what yagya means? Yagya means doing something for Krishna. As we hear, you know, during any yagya sacrifice, the priest, he is saying, idam Krishna, idam namama. It's for you, Krishna, it's not for me. So it's the purpose of yagya, to satisfy the Lord. And just because, you know, in grihastha life, you know, there are many, we can say, allurements to use the funds, to use the resources for my personal sense gratification. That's why to somehow counteract this natural tendency, grihastha is supposed to perform yagyas. And for him, charity is a duty. He has to give in charity to those people who are more renounced, because, you know, brahmacharis, vanaprastha, sannyasis, they are not engaged in any economical activities. They depend on donation, which are generally coming from grihastha. That's why by sharing with other people, it becomes a habit. To give away, it becomes a habit. In this way, these internal attachments, they become weaker and weaker. So if grihastha doesn't have this habit to constantly, regularly give away, you know, to do charity, then, you know, his attachments grow, they become stronger, and it is much more difficult for him to accept vanaprastha style. So that's why by being fully engaged in so many things, but, you know, if these engagements are, we can say, pervaded by spiritual knowledge, then knowledge helps us to turn our activity into yagya. If you look in Bhagavad Gita again, when Krishna describes different kinds of yagyas in chapter 4, he said that jnana yagya is much better than dravya yagya. Dravya yagya means just, you know, sacrificing some material objects. And jnana yagya means when we sacrifice our intelligence, just trying to get spiritual knowledge. So, and then Krishna said that jnana yagya is better than dravya yagya because the purpose of all yagyas is to get spiritual knowledge. So yagya makes person more detached. And also it is clearly stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that knowledge, spiritual knowledge, makes person more detached. But spiritual knowledge can be, you know, gotten through, you know, just studying or through devotional service. As famous verse from Srimad Bhagavatam states, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojudaha Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chaidahaitukam. So by doing some devotional service to the Lord Vasudeva, the person gets knowledge without any external reason, and knowledge is followed by detachment. So if person is not detached enough, it means he is lacking knowledge. He is lacking knowledge. Because what is actually our knowledge? Our knowledge is that everything belongs to God. That's it, very simple. That's the basis of Sambandha Jnana. You know, as stated in Srimad Ishapanishad, Ishavasya Madam Saran, everything belongs to God. Moving or non-moving, everything belongs to God. That's the principle of Ishavasya. So the Lord is the supreme proprietor of everything. So if you really got it, if you really deeply understand it, then, you know, it becomes the basis of our detachment. So knowledge and detachment, they go together. They go together. So if you are still attached, it means that we are like a knowledge, that everything belongs to God. That's why theoretical knowledge, as I mentioned, it should also always be followed by the principle of service, practical service. And service means yagya. You do it for Krishna or for yourself. That's my understanding.
Thank you for your class. In the verse, they were talking about the sannyasis being, we should be bona fide and things like that. So let me ask you one question. What do you think about the sannyasis that have bank accounts? And I remember a while back there was, because first of all, sannyasis is supposed to be totally dependent on Krishna. Okay, so And I remember a while back on DonnaVoss.com, there was a very nice article written by, I believe it's Prakosh, but maybe not. He was talking about the money is the honey. And he went into detail about these pronunciation and things like that. And so what's your opinion about that?
Well, money in itself is a neutral energy. It depends, you know, how you use it, you know. If you have a sense of enjoyment, the enjoying mood inside, then this so-called neutral energy becomes no more neutral anymore. So it covers over our mind. And in one purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada states that Lakshmi may turn into Durga. And Durga means prison, jail, which limits us. Hmm? It takes us as slaves, you know. So Lakshmi can turn into Durga immediately as soon as we develop our enduring spirit inside. So we can say that we can maintain our immunity to this energy of money only if we are engaged in the service and we have a complete knowledge that Lakshmi belongs to Vishnu. She is his wife. That's it. And if I'm trying to use somebody's wife in my service, then, you know, we know what follows. As you know, Ravana, he abducted Sita Devi, and we know that, you know, his end was pretty sad. So in a similar way, if you are trying to use Lakshmi in our personal service, then, you know, we are approaching fall down. But what is the position now? In the traditional society, there were no banks and there were no bank accounts, and you know, sannyasis were living by begging. Nowadays, society is no longer traditional. It means, you know, traditional values are no longer the center of our life, no longer the basis of our life, and people have a lot of freedom, but not much responsibility, I would say, and it creates certain risks, danger. And people can be victimized by this energy of money. Of course, you know, some sannyasis, we can say, they may need it for some practical persons if they are responsible for some projects like that. They are into fundraising like that. But, you know, to be on the safe side, I think it is better, you know, to have bank accounts on just some organization, you know, it will be much more secure. It will be less alluring for people to misuse the funds. I'm sorry. So, in my humble opinion, it is better to keep ourselves as close as possible to the traditional culture, because traditional culture protects people, and the modern culture, it spoils people, I would say. So. I'm not sure about Srila Prabhupada, whether he had his personal accounts or accounts were on the name of ISKCON. I can't say for sure. But unless you are completely pure, it's a bit risky to have a bank account if you are sannyasi. At least it creates a, you know, sensitive situation. And, you know, sometimes people become critical about those sannyasis who have direct access to money. So my personal opinion is that it is much safer and better if sannyasis are just giving inspiration to people who are in charge of different projects. But as for, you know, finances, it's better for them not to have a close contact with that. It will be much safer. It's my personal opinion.
First room is darshan room and Prabhupada's translation. Next room is his bedroom. And as you enter on the left side, there is a safe. And safe is always covered by a cloth that nobody sees in the safe. And Prabhupada used to carry the key even to the father. The question was raised by the foundation of how come Prabhupada is carrying the key? He said, this asset inside belongs to Mahaprabhu. It should not be. Because if somebody sees it, they will have some idea of misusing it. That is properly care. He didn't show any attachment, but he used to carry the key and keep it not with him, not with him.
As soon as conditioned soul seizes some money, immediately the idea of enjoyment arises, because money means enjoyment, it's a key to enjoyment. And if a person is not well established, if he is not Brahmanishtha, if he's not established in spiritual life, you know, then he can easily be seduced, allured, you know, by this money. That's why, you know, better to have some system of protection. Otherwise, you know, people can easily fall victim.
MVT, my full endowment trust, that constitutes his personal assets. It's used, obviously, for something this time.
Yeah, it looks much, much safer. Yeah. It's much, much better. Anything else? All right, if there's no more questions, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.